Welcome to episode 11 of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee with Justin Winzenberg and me, Stephen Jones. In today's episode, we discuss news with James Willits and social media with Mike Piccinato. These conversations were recorded several weeks ago. If you haven't heard the other parts of these conversations, we talked with James in episode 7 and Mike in episode 9. We start by picking up on a conversation with James about how different truth universes have emerged in the way that we see both history and the present. So here's a question that I have. As we think about this kind of thing of having these polarized grids, you know, and really these are epistemological, hermeneutical type of questions as we look at history, but they also connect to the present, right? The way that we read the present, and even the search for a villain and a hero seems to be something that we do in the present as well. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about this idea of these different truth universes that people seem to be living in now. Do you bring some of that, I don't know, that care of, you know, what do facts mean and that kind of stuff into your reading of the news in the present? Like, what does that look like for you?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that I took away from my undergraduate studies in history was the idea of bias not being something that is simply present in the present, but is something that is present in the past as well. And that therefore, when you are reading both historians and the works of historical actors, you have to bear in mind that they will have bias in the way that they are trying to present themselves. And I think that that is something that is valuable to everyone. I think that in how we consume media today and how we consume the things that we read, the things that we watch, most people have an understanding that there is bias in terms of certain networks might be more right-leaning or more left-leaning. If you watch Fox, it's probably going to have a more pro-Republican stance than CNN or MSNBC. And I think that one of the interesting things that has happened now is that we have got to the point where, just as in the way that we vote, people have started to pack and self-select. So these ideas that you move to places where there are people more like you, and therefore the popular vote gets more and more closely distributed into areas where you have Democrats and you have Republicans. I think we've started to consume media in the same way. Democrats now read left-leaning media or watch left-leaning news shows, and Republicans watch right-leaning media. And so we've come to a point where our media has completely divided, and I don't think that we're even, in some cases, having the same conversation.
Right.
That idea of there being two or more separate truth universes where one side has its own view and the other side has its own view, but there's nothing in the middle that kind of puts those two together, I think is really, really dangerous and is becoming more and more common.
So do you look for sources in the middle, or do you consume from multiple sides, or like, how do you address that?
I consume from multiple sides. I will be honest, I find it difficult to consume good media from both sides, because I find that even the best media outlets tend to skew very heavily one way or the other. Mm. So I read my go-to British newspaper is The Guardian. I have started rejecting the BBC, even, because the BBC has got this is going to be a very sidebar here. The BBC is not really pro-left or pro-right. It is pro whichever government is in charge, because it gets its funding from that government.
Yeah,
so as a result, the BBC you can see that it leans very, very heavily in whatever direction the government of the time leans. And as that government weakens, it gets more and more incisive in its reporting as it realizes that it can do journalism with less threat because that government is probably about to fall. But when that government is very powerful, or when that government is at the beginning of its term of 5 years, the BBC is almost neutered. And I think that there is the BBC right now, and probably for the last 5 or 6 years, has been a terrible news organization for holding the government and the authorities to account. I think that it is very good at kind of, you know, reporting smaller scale issues, but when it comes to political coverage, it's absolutely awful. So
British political coverage?
Yes. It's much better overseas political coverage because it can be. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to kind of, you know, holding the British government to account, it's embarrassing. Even down to the fact that, you know, a few days ago we had, with COVID-19, we became the second highest, we now have the second highest death toll of anywhere in the world behind the United States. We overtook Italy as the second highest, and we are now the highest in Europe. On that day that happened, their lead article was about the fact that the chief medical officer was going to have to resign for the fact that he had been seeing his partner and like during lockdown. Now, one of those, that's an important story, but it is not the most important story of the day. And it was very clearly that original report came from the Times, which is a right-leaning newspaper. And it turned out that the Times had that information since March and had basically been keeping it for a time when it would be it would basically muddy the waters of coverage. And the BBC unthinkingly, or possibly, you know, maybe perhaps me saying unthinkingly is a little
worse,
bit like optimistic. Yes, right. Yeah. There are worse ways that I can say that. The BBC just latched onto it and led with that as the main bit of news. So you get the fact that now the United Kingdom has got the second highest death rate in the world with a population that is significantly smaller than a lot of other countries around the world. You get that relegated to the second biggest news story of the day. Like that's criminal. That is an occasion where we should be holding the government to account. And we should be reporting on the fact that the chief medical officer is doing this, but we shouldn't be doing it because it's driven by political partisan views. Anyway, that aside, I consume a lot of my news from outside of America in the same way that I consume British media for the rest of the world, and I consume a lot of American media for Britain, because I think that it's a lot easier to report objectively from outside of these partisan battles. That is tricky, though. I am a news junkie. I spend a lot of my day reading around the news, listening to podcasts, going to websites that are not really that mainstream in order to try and get a better narrative of what is happening around the world.
Yeah, I noticed that there's been like this trend, I feel like, among my friends and my family as we're wrestling through the issue of COVID and hearing different people say things along the lines of like, well, you know, I researched this or I researched that. And we hear about a lot of research. And it's so interesting to hear that narrative, because I'm thinking like the world that I live in, research constitutes a certain thing. And to me, reading a couple websites doesn't necessarily mean you've done any research, even though you've certainly read up on it. I'm kind of curious to know, since there's all these truth universes as it relates to the COVID, like as a teacher of history, like how do you encourage genuine research, not just like academic research, but when people really want to know about an issue, is it really going to these multiple sources that you think is the best approach? And even the sense of bias, I'm not opposed to the idea that biased sources can't be helpful in some ways, but in the same sense, there's dangers to just like looking at one side. So do you have like any words in terms of how to navigate this? Like if people really want to do research, like what do we do?
I think the first thing is recognizing, there's two things that you've said there that I think are important to recognize. One is that it isn't enough to just flit around different news media and like kind of, you know, take the average of those. That is not that is not going to give you a significantly different view than, you know, just what news media you have read. The second is that bias in and of itself is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. This is something that I do talk a lot about with my students, that, you know, everyone has bias. Every single thing that you read in some respects will have some form of bias, whether it is intended to be pro-government, or whether it's intended to be pro-economy, or whether it's intended to actually say, hey, maybe we should back off a little bit from reopening so that we can, I guess I want to say pro-life there, but maybe not in the understanding that we normally have
broader sense, right?
Yes, exactly. Whatever it is, there is going to be an element of bias. That is not something that should put you off if you can see that. What is important is to read through that and parse out the significant facts and figures. And I think that we are, the pandemic has opened up an interesting way of seeing the world, in that we can very, very clearly see these truth universes in real time. And sometimes that's slightly more difficult. But we are now in a position where it is a little bit easier to kind of look and say, hey, there are two sides of this. And I would say, personal opinion, and obviously it doesn't have to be the podcast's opinion, I would say that one of those sides is more credible than the others. One of those sides has the majority of the research on them, on their side. So it has, you know, scientific backing. It has the weight of what other nations are doing to demonstrate what has worked and hasn't worked. The other side has not got that. So I think the unfortunate thing is there isn't really like a silver bullet for this. It would be really nice if I could say, hey, there is this one thing that if we all did, you know, a very clickbaity title for the podcast.
Professor Willits teaches you how to find truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there really isn't. The problem is it requires discernment, and discernment is a discipline. Mm. Like you have to work on it. It is not something that comes overnight. I don't think
it's like a muscle, right? You have to develop this skill and...
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that one of the things that I would say is that it needs to be something that is taught across disciplines. History is a discipline that can teach discernment, can teach recognizing bias, can teach parsing out what information is relevant, what information is capital T true, and what information is kind of maybe small t true. Though, like, kind of the difference between facts and opinions, the difference between a unsourced belief and something that has citations. Those, however, are something that you have to work on. And I think that part of the idea of higher education is that it does teach some of those skills. But I think that we often neglect those because they are difficult and they don't often always fit fully into the curriculum or the or the plan that we have for our classes.
Yeah, in some ways, I think you're what you're saying, you know, you're kind of preaching to the choir, because I think you got a good sales pitch for a liberal arts education in what you're saying. In some ways, it's also the reason why I've been a little bit frustrated by some of the ideas that have been floating around in the U.S. that, like, really all we need is to have everybody go to trade schools. And it's not right. that people going to trade schools is a bad thing. And it's not that they're fantastic.
They have
And it's not that somehow in liberal arts education, we're always going to get this right or do this well. But we do provide something that trade schools can't provide, just like they provide something that we can't necessarily provide either. And so in some ways, I'd like to see the conversation on the balance when it comes to education to say, yeah, there are folks who, you know, that going to a liberal arts education isn't going to be their cup of tea, or won't be what would be best for them, and vice versa. And so in some ways, I think that we have an even stronger claim to the value of liberal arts education in light of these things that you're bringing up.
It's an interesting thing about the internet that it was meant to bring us together. It was meant to make us more aware of what was going on and to give us more information at our fingertips. And in many ways, it has done the opposite. it has opened up a space for these different truth universes to not just be present in fringe groups, or not just be kind of, you know, the views of one person, but to actually gain a foothold in society as a whole. And I think the one of the ways that we have to, going forward, I think that there is very much a real need for us to grapple with some of these questions on a larger scale as a country. It is now, I think, manifestly unclear that the media as a whole is failing us. The way that it presents information from politicians, from leaders, from scientists, the way that it balances those and its obsession with the idea that both sides have equal merit, it has been disastrous for us. And this is going to sound very, I don't know if you've seen The Newsroom, but Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. This is now going to be a very Aaron Sorkin-esque plea for a better media. But we need that. It is literally, in this case, killing Americans to not have a media that is prepared to say, actually, some things transcend partisanship. Mm. Some things require us to have a single truth universe in which everyone can get together and say, hey, maybe it would be better if fewer Americans died, if we tried to tackle this disease, and if we did so by following the advice of people who are experts in this field. Liberal arts is important, but so is scientific. So, the sciences, like, that is where we are getting our information. And it shouldn't just be the fact that you have to have a liberal arts education to filter out the chaff that comes in from politicians and the media. That's putting the responsibility and the onus upon a population that shouldn't really have to do that themselves. Like, actually, there is a deeper and broader need for the people who are giving us this information to be held to account. Again, this isn't really a silver bullet that can help people out. And I would say that if anything, because that probably isn't going to happen, people do continue to need to work on their discernment and their understanding of, like, kind of the complexity of this, of where bias is and isn't important to ignore. But I think that we definitely need to have a different conversation as a nation than the one we are currently having, which at the moment is just, is this side right or is this side right? You decide.
Friend Victoria, who joined us for episode 8, was recently part of an excellent discussion dealing with fake news. You can find it on the Christian Feminist Podcast, episode 127, and at christianhumanist.org. We turn now to a conversation about social media that we had several weeks ago with Mike Picanato, who lives in Berlin, Germany. It sounds like your experience of these recent questions that you put out there ended up being kind of painful.
I don't know if those ones, I mean, there was one more recently that I think has been probably a little more painful, more because it I think just when people that you are close to have different opinions, and then they want to paint you with a broad brush instead of listening to heart, I think that can be a little more challenging. And so, you know, I mean, if anybody follows me on Facebook, they know that I'm fairly sporadic as it is, but I haven't been really eager to wade back into the water since that last thread. And part of it is waiting for, I think COVID gave some specific topics that were easier to launch as questions. And the perspective gave me the opportunity to wade in with questions differently. Hey, this is probably doing things here, but this is what I seem to be seeing there. What's the difference and why? And so now it's hard for me to find new topics that give me that unique neutral position to wade into and just open up conversation, because it's harder to do things about anything that might be political, because it's just a bigger challenge.
I haven't been on Facebook since 2007.
Have you missed it desperately?
Well, this is a dilemma for me. You know, Stephen and I have talked about this some too, and I've talked about it with my wife, but I kind of want to get back on because I feel like I'm missing out on some of these conversations, and yet I'm really hesitant because I just don't know what if I'm actually missing out on anything. This isn't to be dismissive of, you know, of the posts you've been making or anything like that. It's just the nature of the Facebook conversations can become so... people say things on Facebook to their friends that they would never say to them in real life. And I'm not sure that's always a good thing. So to me, that's what I'm a little bit nervous about is I don't want to be the kind of person who would all of a sudden start saying things to my friends that I would be more cautious to filter out when we're talking face to face. And I don't know if I have the emotional stability to handle my friends doing that to me either. So it's a selfish thing. I want to kind of be in on the conversation and find out what people are saying. Cause I just hear, you know, from rumors from people, but I also am a little hesitant to think, oh, maybe I'm better off just staying out of the game here. any advice you have for me?
Oh goodness. I think people used to say, well, if you really want to know what's valuable to a person, you can look at their calendar and you can look at the checkbook, right? Or their...
Yeah.
I wonder how much Facebook feed would work into that current equation.
Seriously.
Is that really valuable to people, or is that the managed lifestyle that they want to present? And so I don't know where it is. I know that I have teen children, and two of my three have been on and then back off of Facebook. And I said, but I just want to be able to love my family, and I can't if I'm on Facebook. And so you know, I mean, I think it's just not just because of how people treat other people when they're on Facebook. You know, they say things that they wouldn't say in person, like you said, but also the deeper view you get into what people say is valuable that maybe you wouldn't necessarily talk about over dinner with somebody. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm debating giving up Facebook again too, not because I don't want to be able to wade into conversations, but because I haven't figured out the best way to do that in a way that actually furthers the conversation and doesn't just end up with people in the same camps that they were before yelling at each other. I don't want to be the place where the two divided parties now have a central place to come and suddenly they're seeing the other people's view. I mean, in one way that's good, right? They're suddenly seeing the other person's view and having to read it. But in the other case, I don't really need my threads to become shouting matches. Luckily, that doesn't often happen. People kind of come in and discourse civilly. But I wonder if there's not another platform of some sort, whether it's a blog or whatever else, where you can control what you're giving and then mediate the comments in a different way. But then the challenge is that you're the only people that are going to come to it are the people that want to see it.
Right. And it risks being one more echo chamber.
Yeah. Right. And so, I mean, Facebook does push you out of that, but sometimes it can be really depressing too.
Yeah, I do. I've disciplined myself to not block certain folks whose posts I'm like, oh, why are they saying that? but I've disciplined myself not to block them because I'm like, it's important to, if I'm going to be on here, right? Part of the idea is that I am being present with people that I wouldn't be able to be present with otherwise. And so yeah, I want to not just create one more space that sounds like what's inside my head. I think that's been good.
But the dopamine says, post what you're going to get approval on.
Right.
we can't miss that we're fighting chemical addictions when we're on. Right. Yeah, I mean.
Well, Steven, that's what I miss that. I miss connecting with people who I'm like, man, if it weren't for Facebook, I wouldn't be able to keep up with them. And I haven't kept up with them. I had all these Facebook friends of people I'd met in various locations that I was able to keep up with that now I've lost touch with. And I really miss that. But I also know there's this terrible tendency in myself, and hopefully my students won't feel this is the case in person, but I can tend in online or text message conversations to be more mean than I ever would be in person. When it comes to conversations that are heated, I feel a natural tendency to be more gentle in person and in the classroom, I hope, than I am in online forums. And that frightens me a little bit. And it makes me feel like I should just stay off. I don't really want to be that person.
I would like to think that I'm a sanctified SDI red. with a nice healthy Enneagram 1, but man, there are times where I just know that Facebook is going to challenge my sanctification and shoot me down that health ladder on the Enneagram. And that could be a wicked, wicked combination. And so how do you fight through that? And it's, do you say nothing? Is that the answer? If I'm not on Facebook, I don't go to bed saying, I sure wish I would have responded to that moron. or I sure wish I wouldn't have responded to that moron. Yeah. Right? If I'm not on Facebook, life goes on without me. And so some of it is needing to fight that mix between that Messiah complex. If I could only go on Facebook, I could convince people of what truth is.
Oh gosh. No. So I only re-engaged Facebook recently. And in fact, my response to your thread was the first time that I think I had commented on a post in probably, I don't know, a long time, like 5-6 years, something like that. Like I just haven't really been on it and then re-engaged it in this whole lockdown thing. And I just think I don't know. I feel like it's had very mixed benefits. But there was a moment recently where I found out that one of my grads had a kid that is a toddler now. And so I had missed that because I wasn't on Facebook. And I was like, oh, that would have been nice to know to celebrate with them, you know? And anyway, yeah, just things like that. And then, yeah, there are other moments where I'm like, I just feel this, like sometimes it's one more area of obligation. And I'm like, if I was not checking this, I would have no obligation right now. But now I have to figure out, okay, do I owe this person a response or can I, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it is a weird thing. And it is a very, in the scheme of human history, it's still a very, very new thing, right? And so I think in many ways, we just have not figured out how to integrate it into life well.
And we're still figuring out how it works, right? I mean, what are the expectations from me exactly? If somebody knows that I'm on Facebook and they have a child and I don't congratulate them, how does they interpret that? Or, you know, I mean,
or somebody has an anniversary and I give them a thumbs up and don't make a comment. Is that enough?
It's complicated. We were visiting with neighbors here recently and I don't even know what the app is, but apparently you can enter in your phone number and then there you are on a map so that all your classmates can know where you are. She was talking about her school-aged niece and the complications that come with that. You know, as they're getting ready to go somewhere, she has to check to see which of my friends are there, because if I show up, they know I'm there and they know that I know they're there. And that communicates something.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting. Communicates.
Oh, man. Right? I feel like social anxiety just goes through the roof, right?
So they stay at home.
Right? Oh, I'm just scared
to go there because I don't want them thinking that I came because I like them.
Wow.
Or I don't like them, so I can't go. The layers of social pressure that that these handy little devices are sometimes causing us is really mind-blowing. But hey, you guys get to deal with that in a university setting soon. So
And I noticed when I got off Facebook how very few people knew when my birthday was. So I think about all the birthday wishes you get on Facebook. And then I went from that to all of a sudden no birthday wishes. And I actually feel bad about it. But then I thought to myself, I'm like, is that just a shallowness of Facebook? Of like, look at people only know about you or care about you because you're posting this fact it's your birthday on there? Or is it actually like a benefit? Is it this thing where it's like, look, there are well-intentioned people who would wish me happy birthday if they only knew it was my birthday. And of course they know because it's popping up right there in front of them on their screen. So I kind of try to balance it of like, on the one hand, is it this shallowness of like, well, people only wishing you happy birthday because your date is posted right there. In another sense, it's like, no, these are well-intentioned people who I think, you know, if I didn't have a device in front of me, Steven, I don't know your birthday. I don't remember.
I think I kept mine hidden on Facebook, so I don't get very many.
You don't get those. Yeah. And I really don't feel bad. Like, oh, these people didn't wish me happy birthday, but it was this sense of like this social trying to navigate what it means.
Justin, I put your birthday on my calendar, so I remember it.
What's your birthday again? I better put it on now.
I don't want to say it on the podcast.
That's true. Why? I mean, people wish you more happy birthday. Are you worried that they might look you up and and try to get your social security number?
I mean, and maybe I'm living in an illusion that I can control any part of my personal information.
That's just it.
I had a friend who who sent the same reply to everybody that wished him happy birthday. And it was something banal, like, of all the birthday wishes I got today, yours is one of them. Thanks. And I remember getting that and thinking, man, dude, you just copied and pasted. Okay, it wasn't any more original than my happy birthday wish to you, but I actually feel bad for wishing you a happy birthday right now.
Yours was one of them. Yeah. That's great.
But you know, I am on LinkedIn, and I got every year I get this birthday wish from a scholar who I've never met, but whose work I've read and reviewed. And it's always this kind of nice, brief birthday wish. And it makes me feel like $1 million. Like, wow, this guy is wishing me happy birthday. And would he know it was my birthday if my birthday wasn't on LinkedIn? You know, I doubt it. So it's kind of cool, actually, too, right? Like,
for people who know, I've started to cheat the system, and now they're going to know if they listen to the podcast. But, you know, it's if their birthday date pops up on Facebook, I'll send them an email. And I don't know, somewhere in the sincerity of messages, I don't know what the ranking is anymore. But I feel like email feels more sincere than the Facebook wall. So I just wonder, how do we communicate value to people? And
that's a deep one.
Now all the friends that never get emails from me on their birthday are going to feel like they're...
Exactly. All I got was a Facebook message. I guess I know where I rank.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, it's dinner time for you probably, isn't it?
Well, maybe as soon as I make it. That is at 6 o'clock.
It's great talking with you, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, thanks so much for being with us today.
Anytime. I mean, yeah. I might have to post more on Facebook to give us themes to talk about.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee. Our theme music is by Josiah Enns. We hope you can join us for coffee again next week.